Well, here at the station, we had been on the air for about a day and a half talking hurricanes basically around the clock. But it became obvious that with a storm this size, if it remained the size that it was and the power that it was, chances were we'd be off the air for days.
The night before the storm hit, I was on the air late giving weather forecasts and updates on city closures and that kind of thing. I was planning on staying and going back on the air that afternoon. The next morning, as I was getting my first cup of coffee before I had a chance to turn on the radio or the television, my phone rang, and it was the program director saying, "By the way, I know you probably just got up, but in case you didn't know, the storm has gone from a Category 3 to a Category 5 overnight."
At that point, it was a high Category 5 bearing down on New Orleans and looking very much like that hurricane we'd always feared would come.
If it's that bad, you cannot stay here. You have to get out.
So I went home and spent about an hour getting some things together, grabbed my cat, put everything in the car, and met up with Chuck at a certain point here in town. I guess it was near the radio station, and headed for Atlanta.
I get to Florida and cop a couple of hours sleep, and then I get a phone call from someone who had ridden out the storm in New Orleans. And she was saying, "Well, you know, things look pretty good right now." And then about an hour later, she called back and said, "Well, spoke too soon."
I don't think we knew how long it would be initially before we could return, or what kind of condition the university and the radio station would be in.
And we were all pretty well in touch. My very first text message was from our engineer, Robert, who texted me, "Drove by your house. Your house is fine. You need a new roof."
Robert Carroll is chief engineer for the station, and Ron Curtis made a foray into town and determined that there was not significant damage at the transmitter.
That was quite an adventure because we got back here at night. There were police checkpoints basically saying, "You know, you're not supposed to be out, but we have a letter saying we could be. You're on your own." We were stopped by National Guardsmen near the site.
Oh, that was wonderful.
Out of the shadows, guns and the whole nine yards.
We wouldn't have been able to move around the way that we did without passes from the state patrol, from the state government, from local police and parish officials, and especially from NPR.
By the third week in September, we were in position to get back on the air.
I don't remember whether Chuck had in mind, as we headed to Atlanta, a plan to do what eventually happened, and that was broadcast remotely from a facility in Atlanta. I don't know whether that was the plan.
At the time, I believe OZ was not on the air yet, so the general manager at the time decided that we were going to mix classical and jazz programming back-to-back, interspersed with news reports as necessary, and that's exactly what we did.
And we were able to put together enough gear for me to set up a home studio. I was able from that point on to not only produce taped features or to do live segments on the Morning Edition and All Things Considered shows, but also to do Saturday Night Jazz live from the second smallest room in my house.
And if you didn't know what was really going on, it almost sounded normal, but behind the scenes it was pretty apparent it wasn't.
It was a matter of day-to-day waiting for word from the university when we could get back.
The campus really did not get reliable power back till sometime, I believe, in December. And we started back up right around the first of the year, I believe, is when we started broadcasting from here again.
And it was a jaunt across the campus. We're located on the campus of the University of New Orleans. And walking from the parking lot, well, I would run because it was a little scary in the early days.
Through it all, the mission had to be maintained. The mission had to be accomplished of informing and providing our music services to the community.
you give a little more in this type of a situation because you're trying to disseminate information to people who are on the other end, and they're depending on you to help get them through this ordeal, and it was quite an ordeal.
Everybody helped everybody else without any consideration to how much energy it was going to expend or how much time it took to do it, and I think that helped the local industry, the local broadcasting, recover a lot more quickly.
Again, the radio station, I think, proved its value to the community in a number of ways and highlighted its value to the community in a number of ways that maybe previously had not been understood.
We don't talk down to the listeners, that we respect their intellect and we assume that they care about this as much as we do. I think that's why people had started listening in greater numbers after the storm.
That is the purpose of radio, is to get information out. Be it fun stuff or in time of need, that's what it's here. And I know that if we've helped, you know, two people, then that's great.
You appreciate things more when you lose them. And it made us appreciate WWNO even more.
When I think of New Orleans, what makes it special is not old buildings or the fact that it borders a river and a lake, but it's the people who are here. And I said, you know, as long as there are good people that I can hang out with and feel comfortable with, it's still going to be a better place for me.